It's the True Faith Podcast. Huddersfield Town 0, Newcastle United 1. Oh, what fun it is to see Newcastle win away. We sang in the away end. What a day. What a terrible game of football, but who cares? And you've got myself, Alex Hurst, Norman Riley, Adam Widrington and Simon Campbell to talk to you for the next 45 minutes to an hour about Newcastle United and Rafa's mighty mugs. Heading up the league, away from the relegation zone and all of that. Quick things first, we are in partnership with FansBet, the unique gambling company who share 50% of their net profit with fan organisations like True Faith or whatever. So if you like a gamble, we recommend you check them out. If you don't, please don't. Don't please start gambling on our behalf, but I'm sure you wouldn't anyway. And then we are also sponsored by our patrons who pay £5 a month for loads of these podcasts and keep this podcast free. Lads, Norman, Adam, Si, I'm still glowing in the beauty of 3 points. It was an absolute nightmare of a drive home, but it doesn't matter when you've got 3 points in the bag. The stupid A19 was closed because people were crashing their cars in the weather, which was infuriating. We had to drive through fucking Sunderland, which no one likes to do. but Norman, we'll start with you. Why don't you describe to the lovely listeners your trip from London to and from Huddersfield yesterday?
It was a great day. Absolutely. I mean, the result's just the icing on the cake. And if any patrons have listened to the match day pod, I think on the train on the way up, I'm pretty much saying, like, this moment is kind of what you, it's the moments like, this is all what you do it for. The whole build up was fantastic. The train, you know, up, drinking on the train, talking about football. And it's almost, you think, like, it, regardless of the result, what we have to try and do is remember this, because this has just been brilliant so far. And anything after it is an absolute bonus. And obviously, as I say, we got the result, which was magnificent. But I got talking to some good people on the train, met a young Huddersfield fan on the way there, on the Leeds to Huddersfield leg. He was absolutely sound. On the way back, got talking to another Huddersfield fan, again a bang on lad. They're both on the Match Day podcast, and it was really good to get their input, and also to kind of get their magnanimous attitude towards losing like such a big game. They were very actually, they were a bit like Wagner after the match yesterday. I thought Wagner could have come out and, you know, gave it the we were so unlucky, blah, you know, we dominated the game, etc. And he didn't. He was very kind of, well, we just didn't create enough clear-cut chances, simple as that. And they were very much like that. And the whole day just went fantastically well. The atmosphere, I thought, in the way end, despite the sideways sleet, which I've referenced the Stoke match away last season, on a good few occasions, has been a kind of, you know, the benchmark for what I consider to be the perfect performance under pressure when the points are absolutely required. And I think we kind of did that yesterday. And in the weather matched the weather in Stoke last year, as I say, that sideways ice cold sleet driving in your face, and it 0-0 at half time, you can really feel it. But by about 70 minutes yesterday, I think we completely forgot that we were all on the verge of getting hypothermia. Brilliant day.
I really enjoy the way that when I've asked you how was your day, you've managed to get David Wagner's post-match comments saying that you're a true football man.
Thanks, mate.
like your wife getting bangs. How was this here, Norman? Well, have you heard Wagner on the telly? He's been polite. He's been cordial. You're not being a crack every day. That just shows how much you love the game. Yeah, my experience is similar to yours. We drove down and we came in a weird way to Huddersfield, like away from the train station in the city centre, town centre. We're a lovely little pub, weren't we, Norman? We met you there. £8.20 for 3 pints. You know, more of that, please. Other places, other pubs near football grounds in England, and it was really nice, right? Nice atmosphere, and then it just pissed it down to a. You know, it wasn't just the fact that the rain was heavy and non-stop. It was the fact it was like literally 0 degrees, freezing. So you kind of were getting frozen. We walked down the biggest of hills ever to get to the ground. We had to walk back up that hill after the game, and at half time. It wasn't a particularly happy place because it was one of those where you're just like, what am I doing here? It's fucking freezing. It's Christmas time. I should be like with a family. I need to make a family first, but I should probably try to do that and like try and be a proper grown up and do these things at Christmas time rather than standing here freezing my bollocks off watching Huddersfield dominate a game against Newcastle. Fast forward 45 minutes and I just want to go back. So goals change games and outlooks. But a cracking day. The away end was magnificent. I've got some audio from the away end, which we'll have for the Match Day podcast. We're going to mention this Match Day podcast like 100 times because we won. We're going to keep that for the end of the show. But the away end was fantastic. Second half, some brilliant songs. Really happy. Just loads of Newcastle United fans. We were bumping into people on the way out. Absolutely fucking buzzing. Like people who go to the away games who you kind of don't know that well, but you see them and you give them a nod and a hello. And everyone was just fucking like everyone knew the gravity of this result, which we're going to go into later. But we may as well talk about some actual football because that's what everyone's here to listen to. So Adam, I'm gonna start with you, and I've noticed through your two network account a couple of exchanges where you were clearly very enthused by the performance, Adam. You were very positive about what the lads gave, and at half time yesterday, I mean I don't know how you were feeling, Adam, but there was a few boos at half time from the win, which is always a ridiculous thing to do. Never mind a fucking half time nil nil against Huddersfield, but we were also very dispirited at half time because Huddersfield, who are very poor side, it have to be said, had dominated the game. What were your overall thoughts on the performance, Adam?
Yeah, I've got to agree with the. I mean, the first half performance, I was very despondent. I thought that given that their key man was out and absent, and the fact that they had to start with essentially their second choice striker, you know, we weren't as potent on the counter attack as we had been against Burnley, as we had been against Everton. We were never going to dominate possession as such. I think when we do dominate possession, it's a very rare occurrence with this set of players. But, you know, I just expected us to kind of take the game more, but I just felt our passing was off. We were sort of panicked a bit. They were obviously from the off trying to just lump balls in towards De Poitre. And in terms of the final third, we're just absolutely blunt. So, I mean, it was probably one of our poorest halves of football this season against a team that we really should have been. And you think, you know, as you mentioned, the gravity of the game, the situation, how important it was to absolutely not lose, and ultimately even a draw, I don't think would have done us any favours. But whatever happened at half time, Alex, we got to kick up the arse, and suddenly, you know, I mean, Perez had been working really, really hard first half anyway, but suddenly the movement and things just seemed to click a bit better in the second half in terms of the potency of our counter-attacks. And I'm not even just referring to the absolutely excellent move that led to the goal, but we just seemed a bit more dangerous, and we had a few more chances. You know, Atsu had a strike from the edge of the box. Richie had a strike from the edge of the box when he came in. You had the counter-attack that Atsu tried to feed to Perez, which was called offside when it was blatantly onside. So we did so much more in that second half. And it should have been a lot more comfortable than it was. But honestly, it wasn't a pretty game. It wasn't a particularly good game for the neutral. But what I was most impressed about, and I think which is what you're referring to, is how much we battled, how much we fought, the discipline that we showed, the structure, you know, the tactical structure that we demonstrated, the lines we can make it so, so difficult for teams to score against us, and they dominated possession. But you know what? It didn't matter. It doesn't matter. And Norman alluded to Wagner sort of saying, well, he could have said, oh, well, we dominated this, dominated that. But if you're not getting reasonable, clear-cut chances, you can't expect much from the game anyway. I mean, probably the most dangerous player in the first half was Fabian Scher in terms of, you know, meaningful shots at goal. And he got in behind in the first half. But yeah, I just thought it was embattled, and the players understood just how important that was. And a pragmatic Rafa Benitez will be delighted with that full-time whistle.
Yeah, and it was echoed in the away end as well. And similar scenes to Burnley with Mark Steyn kind of 20, 25 minutes after the final whistle, just saying, who is that team? We'll call United. You know, on the Matchday podcast, which we record kind of before, during and after the game for patrons, we've been lucky recently to catch some of the goals. Just, we don't really record much of the game. It's only kind of 5 or 10 minutes as we're describing what's going on, or normally after, before and after goals. But we've managed to capture Norman's beautiful rendition, or whatever, commentary of this goal. So we're going to play this recording right now for listeners and talk about it a little bit, because it was one of the great goals to witness. And I mean, call it scenes, limbs, whatever you want to call it, whatever adjective or word you want to put in there for what happened in that away and after we scored that goal. But here's Norman's brilliant commentary for about 90 seconds or so.
We've given them so much of the ball. I'm fashioning anything. You know, we've had a couple of attacks and we should have done better. And the thing is, these are here to be fucking got at. Get a goal against them and we've won the game.
There it is.
Pritchard still run the fucking show, like, to be fair. They better keep up, keep the pressure up the pitch, up that part of the pitch. That's it. Come here, push the fullback. That'll do. Just keep them there, keep them pressed in. These are yet to be got at. The thing is, we're giving them so much of the ball, but they don't actually create anything clear cut. And the minute we get a chance, if we're clinical, and if we go up against these lot, we will fucking win. One minute win, yeah. All right, half another gun. No teach. We'll let them blow the fucking load. Perez there, nice, lovely, in the Mankio. Great ball in! It's a goal! It's a fucking goal!
Yeah, lads. So
that was brilliant.
Oh, yeah, tell you what, though, moment, like a sage.
You are. Nice. I mean, literally 30 seconds before the goal, you're saying they've blown their load. If we get a goal against these, if we're clinical, we'll get one chance. We're scoring 30 seconds later. But I'm just going to read back your words, that little section, Norman, because it gets me emotional. You've gone Perez there, lovely. Lovely into Mankio. Great touch. Great ball in. It's a goal. It's a fucking goal. It's a fucking goal by Rondon. It's a fucking goal by fucking Rondon. And it was perfect. Like, fuck your alternative Queen's speech or your Queen's speech. Get that on. Get that to the nation. Like, I want that on a t-shirt. I want that in my house. And, like, I'll tell you that. So I'm going to get this, like, you know, get, like, I don't know what you call it, calligraphy or something with your fancy handwriting, like, quote on the wall. I want that. I want that wallpaper across my house just so I can remember that, Norman. So, that was a brilliant moment in there. That goal did change everything. Adam, I think you're totally right in what you said about halftime. I noticed particularly that Christianatsu was clearly told by Rafa to play much further up the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
In that formation, Atsu rolls a bit of a strange one because he's not playing on the wing, although he gets out wide. It's kind of alongside Key and Diarmé, and in the second half he was much closer to the halfway line, essentially out of possession, and he really caused problems for Huddersfield in the second half. But ultimately, Si, there's one man who just, if he plays well or if he does something positive, it's good news for Newcastle United, and that's Solomon Rondon. And your take on the goal and his general role in this side?
Yeah, it's funny you should say my take on the goal, because that's pretty much all I've seen of the game. Match of the day didn't give him any of the highlights other than the second goal that wasn't. The furthest I got away from my bed yesterday.
Sorry, that's because there wasn't any. Seriously, yeah. It was a terrible, terrible game of football.
I was out with me for my work Christmas due on Friday, so the furthest I got away from my bed yesterday was to collect the dominoes off the bloke at the door, and then I was straight back to bed. So I've only just caught up on all this morning, today being Sunday. Yes, absolutely. Rondon has been an absolute revelation, hasn't he? I mean, imagine where we'd be if he was like available / fit, properly fit for the first 6 or 7 games. I'd completely forgotten what it's like to have a centre forward, a proper centre forward. And this is no disrespect to Dwight Gale, who offers something totally different. Before you say anything, he's a striker. He's a full on striker who can lead the line. He can hold up the ball. And he can put the ball in the back of the net. He's got all the attributes. This is why Rafa wanted him. This is why he was high up Rafa's transfer hit list, even though we weren't even sure if he had the money to spend on him. I'm absolutely devastated now to think we've only got him on loan and anything could happen in the summer. But he's changed our season. Not single-handedly, because I think there's a lot of players contributing at the moment, but it glues the whole of our attack together. Having a player who can do, he's just got all the attributes. He's the strongest player I've seen up front for Newcastle since Shearer, and he's just got all those attributes that have come into fruition every week now.
I mean, do you think, Si, that if the club hadn't pissed about so much at the start of the season, would be much higher up the league, because he wasn't fit until late October?
Possibly. I mean, he wasn't fit in the summer. We might have signed him. He might have still had pre-season and had a few injuries. We might have still been where we are. It would have been nice to have a more settled team a lot earlier. We might have had a few more points, but that's not to say. I mean, our first 6 games were still ludicrously hard, so we were always going to, you know, be near the bottom before we started to kick on. And if you look at the season as a whole now, 17 games played, 16 points. All right, you could argue we should have had a few more points in those first few games. I'm thinking Cardiff, Man U was unlucky to get nothing from. But then you could also say we've got quite lucky where teams have missed last-minute chances against us at 2-1. Was it Bournemouth? This one, to be honest, if we hadn't got that goal, we might never have got it. So the season is pretty much panning out how you'd expect it to be. It's kind of taken shape where we're not in the relegation zone. We're quite, 6 or 7 points off it now? 6 points off Huddersfield, so I think that's where... Are they 18th? Yet we're miles away from the top 10. So we're just stuck in the middle, kind of safe, plodding along, waiting for something massive to change at the club.
Yeah, and any other words, any other words, lads, from Rondon there? Norman, I know you're a big fan of the South American.
He's just, I think he's just showing, as Simon said, exactly why Rafa fought so hard to get him in. I was so determined to get him in, and I think everything, you know, when we spoke with the Venezuelan football journalist, everything she said about Rondon is pretty much panned out. Exactly right. Is the way he leads the line, the way he shields the ball, the movement, his strength in the air, his desire, and his skill as well, and he's a clinical finisher. All of it is really coming to the fore, and it's so important we keep him fit. And you know, let's just have him jetting off like Leicester, places like Iran and Japan to play in meaningless friendlies. he's absolutely vital, because if he gets injured, if we don't bring anyone in the window to at least back Rondon up or challenge him, if he gets injured, we're going to be in real dire straits, because there is no one in the squad capable of replacing what he brings to the side. And last season, to a certain extent, yes, we had Dwight Gayle up front, but his goals record was so low that it's almost like we didn't really play with a kind of centre forward, as Si says it, and it just feels good to have that focal point. And no matter, you know, how old you are as a football fan, how much football you have, I haven't watched, I think the vast majority of us love a proper centre forward, and that's what Rondon is, and it's just really, really good to see him play, and I'm looking forward to seeing him play again, put it that way.
Adam, I didn't ask you about this pre-podcast, so I'll throw this curveball at you, but can you talk to me about Perez? Because again, I noticed you yesterday singing his praises, and he's a hugely criticised and discussed player. Your thoughts on Isaac Perez yesterday?
I thought he was absolutely outstanding, Alex. I thought he was, I would probably say he was our best player. I know that the defence were excellent, but I thought I'd single him out simply from his ability just to you know, brush off what is really unnecessary, unfounded criticism of him. You know, people very, very quickly forget that he scored the winner against Watford. He was 60 seconds away from scoring the equaliser against Wolves. Obviously, it turned out to just be a consolation. And he was a very poor offside decision away from scoring again yesterday. So, and it's not only that, it's his work ethic, it's his tackling, it's his technique that he shows. He's unfazed, but he's not scared to take a man on. And I think what's really, really important is the way that he links up with players like Atsu. You know, I think he's bringing the best out of Atsu at the moment. I don't know what anyone else thinks. I'm one of Atsu's biggest critics, because I don't think he's good enough. But I think we're seeing sort of Atsu overachieving at the minute for his talent levels, simply because of it'll be the coaching staff, Rafa Benitez, and players like Perez and Rondon, who give him confidence. And the link up between Perez and Atsu was particularly noticeable yesterday. And Perez and Rondon have an affiliation as well, so it's really, really important, and I think it's going to be quite tough for Muto to get back into this side.
Couldn't agree more. And this is my terrible analysis of it, but Perez, from the away end, you could just tell yesterday that he was on his game. He was, he obviously did that thing where he kind of gets foul, or he feels his foul, and he stays down on the floor, but he maintained possession well, the flicks were coming off, and he scored a very good goal that should have been allowed, but we're not allowed nice things. I'm sick of years being taken off my life watching Newcastle away from home clinging on to victories. Like, why can't it just be 2-0? Like, you know, like West Ham had at our place. Like, why can't we just have that ever? Stupid linesman. From the sublime to the not so good, Norman, yesterday Kennedy was getting pelters from the away end in the first half.
Can I just come in before you go to Norman there, just on the Perez criticism, which also leads us to Kennedy, actually. he's become that player, hasn't he? We've had them over the years where we have, you're sort of like know-all fans who've decided that they don't like a player, and it's your Perez, it's your Gutierrez, it's your
scapegoats.
Scapegoat's a good word. Obertan got it, Sissoko got it. Once a small section of our fan base has decided that they don't rate a player, they've got an awful lot to do to ever convince them, and they're just waiting for the next mistake to sort of say, I told you he's shite. Perez has become that. Every time he has a bad game now, all these people are so eager to, I told you he was shite. And he's doing so well right now, as you said, Adam, to kind of come out of that, and he's almost unfazed, and that's really important and shows how much character he's got and why he constantly gets in the side, why Rafa continues to trust him, because he's clearly got the mental strength to play in this team in spite of what some people are saying about him. And I think Kennedy's starting to get some of the same treatment, and whether he's got the strength to get through it is remains to be seen.
But maybe, and that we'll get on to that, yes, in terms of yesterday, because we're talking on Sunday now. But yeah, Norman, so your thoughts on that. Do you think a lot of the bile that came Kennedy's way is justified, or do you think he was having a stinker? Because we talked a long time on the Matchday podcast pre-game, and to quote you, Norman, you said this is last chance saloon for him to have a professional career at this level in terms of the Premier League.
I think it is, because he spent a season out on loan at Watford. I don't know, he was injured for it, but he didn't really get in the side there. So there was obviously something not quite right. He's never been given a chance at Chelsea in, what is he now, 22, coming on to 23. And he's mercurial. He's got so much talent. But lately, his performances for Newcastle have just made me question his mental application. And I'm kind of scared that he's just going to slip off the radar almost. At the moment, I genuinely feel at the moment he could do with being dropped for two or three games, because he just looks a little bit lost in terms of what his role is in the side. Obviously, you know, we know that he's kind of gone from playing as a left midfielder / left winger to left back, left wing back. He's still only young. He doesn't apparently speak that much English. And he's clearly got a mental fragility. Yeah, we've said this before. When he's on song, he's fantastic. And when he's not, he's anonymous, and not even anonymous to the extent that he's just quiet. He still gets the ball, but he makes a lot of mistakes, a lot of wrong decisions. And I think it's one of those where he just needs to kind of take a step back and listen to what Rafa and the coaching team are telling him, and just almost completely obey it, like let himself be micromanaged to a pass, because the moment he gets a bit too much time to think with the ball, when his confidence is like this, he offers nothing. But by the way, I don't think any of the, if you see a Bale, I mean, I don't recall any of the particular, the criticism being particularly nasty, but to be honest with you, I was about 9 pounds deep by that point. So I was kind of in my own little world. But in terms of criticism of his performance, I think, you know, after the match, if you're analysing it, then yeah, he was poor yesterday, and he's been poor recently. And I think it's only by fault of the fact that we've got a very small pool of players that he hasn't actually been dropped. And if we go back to playing 4-4-1-1 in the home game, let's say against Fulham, I'd rather Murphy was on the left than Kennedy. I think Kennedy needs to spell out the side. And I think he'll do him the world of good, and I want to see him succeed, because as I say, it would be a real shame if he doesn't. He'll end up going to Spain or Italy and playing for a mid-table side in Spain and Italy, which there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. But in terms of the Premier League, I think other sides will take a look at him at the end of the season if he continues in this vein and just say, well, no, he's not worth it.
A couple of interesting stats about Kennedy yesterday. I do agree with you, Norman. I thought he was, especially first half, was... he was awful. He was struggling to make a very, very, you know, simple passes, but you know, surprised to see that he kind of made more ball recoveries yesterday than Diomi, even second highest on the pitch. Kennedy, he had, you know, he headed clearances 4 out of 4 that he attempted, blocking crosses. So he would have done a bit of unsung work. But I think, you know, obviously we rely on Kennedy to give us something in the final third. Even despite playing it as a kind of left wing back, you know, Manquillo managed to get it the box to assist Rondon. So it's kind of no excuse there, just because he was playing left back, that he shouldn't be you know, contributing to our meaningful attacks. But, you know, whether he was told to kind of be a bit more reserved because we were away, that's something that is obviously Rafa will know, he will know, we won't be aware of. But I think, yeah, in terms of the basics, he didn't seem to be getting those right. And yes, he does seem to be on a bit of poor form. And whether he was still a little bit injured from his ingrown toenail, which is sounds like daft to say, but it would be very painful. And he did actually pull a muscle, I think, clearing a ball yesterday. And he was definitely at full time. He was hobbling down the tunnel. So he did play through the pain barrier a little bit towards the end of the game. I'm not trying to excuse his performance because it was subpar from what he can be. I think he's just, again, confidence player. Like a lot of our players, like Atsu, just needs a couple of things to come off and he'll be flying again. But at the minute, it's tough. And it's a bit different to the Perez situation, as mentioned before, in terms of people on his back, because, you know, Perez is a permanent player for Newcastle. Kennedy isn't. So it's a slightly different situation in that, you know, if he can't get through this, I mean, mentally, does he want to? Is he kind of thinking, oh, I don't need this. I want encouragement. I've had a couple of poor games, but I'm getting all this criticism from the stands. You know, he, at the end of the season, either way, he, whether it's for his benefit or not, he can walk away.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think we saw the best of Kennedy in kind of spring last year. So time will, I mean, there's a lot of people saying at the game, it's just the wrong kind of day to him. I don't know whether that's fair or not. The lads behind us at the match were basically screaming at him to fuck off and never play for Newcastle again, which is a bit strong, personally, I think. But, yeah, I mean, there's so many performances we could go through. We can't talk about every single player. I really quickly want to talk about two players who I thought were excellent yesterday, and that's Kieran Clarke and Javier Manquillo. And they're two players who don't often play much for this side, and I think you have to credit their professionalism, credit the fact that they keep training, keep working hard. They obviously have the respect of the manager and he has their respect. And at any time Manquillo is named on the team sheet, there is a collective groan across the North East, I think. and, you know, Manquillo set that goal up yesterday. It was a brilliant run to keep going. Fantastic. It was a fantastic ball. You know, it looks easy to us, but it's not. You know, it was a great... You know, Rondon basically couldn't miss. And I just think, you know, Manquillo there... One of my issues with the criticism he's got... Listen, he's not a great player. I'd always play DeAndre Yedlin ahead of him. And I wish we had better options, but I've never really seen Manquillo like lose as a game or do anything really daft. I know he got hooked at half time against Cardiff, I think, but that was an injury, as Rafa said. It not because he's on a yellow card and going to get sent off, but for all the criticism he gets, I don't think, well, he smashed the ball into his own net in the 93rd minute, or he's given away, you know, like, you know, the first goal against Wolves, or even, you know, done what Yedlin did against Wolves. He's never done anything like that. Although he isn't particularly brilliant, and then he's basically set up or played a major part in 3 points for Newcastle in one of the biggest games of the season yesterday. And he deserves all the credit for that, and he was fine all game yesterday. It wasn't, you know, the best right back performance I've ever seen or right wing back, but it was competent enough. And when we go to Liverpool or when we go to Watford in particular, if he started in that right wing back position, I think he's far more suited to that with Fabian Schär just inside of him than playing right back. I thought he was good, and I thought Kieran Clarke as well was just superb. I really like Kieran Clarke. He, you know, he's one of our best players in the Championship season. You know, is he our fifth choice centre back? Probably, and Norman's going to talk a little bit about that in a second. But I just think every time he's called upon to come into the team, he plays well and does a great job in that back three and puts his head in where it hurts, and he's not afraid to make titles. And in that first half when we were under pressure, there were numerous balls coming at the box, and it was Kieran Clarke every time getting the ball away. We're lucky in that as threadbare as our squad is and as under as it's had as little investment as it has, we're lucky that we've got lads who are like Manquillo and like Clarke that can just come in from the cold from nowhere and perform like they have. So very positive from those two lads.
Sorry, just quickly on that, Alex, in terms of Clarke and Manquillo. I think because we're in a very unique situation that because Rafa Benitez, world-class manager, isn't getting backed financially, then they're two players who probably know they're very, very, very lucky to be in a Rafa Benitez squad. So they're not necessarily going to be sort of whinging, complaining that they're not getting enough minutes. Like you say, they're both just... Whatever you think of their playing abilities, and I must say I've been impressed with Clarke this season when he stepped in, particularly. Manquillo has obviously hasn't played as much as Clark, but I think the fact that they're both very professional, they'll step in and they'll just do a job, and they're happy to do so. They're happy to be part of that squad, because I think, well, what's the alternative? Yes, they could be playing every week, but what, in for a lesser Premier League side, or, you know, top championship? I don't know. I don't know. It's debatable what their level is, but I absolutely agree with you. They absolutely must be commended for that.
Norman, I want you to talk about the back five as it is. Personally, I thought Rafa got it wrong against Wolves playing with the back five. It's working away from home. 7 points from nine away from home is fantastic in the Premier League, particularly for a club like ours who are just used to not winning away from home in the Premier League, you know, historically. Fabian Schär is a player who kind of is bizarre, because he doesn't work in a back four. He was dreadful against West Ham. He was poor in other games this season in a back four. But put him in a back five, not only does he become fantastic, and if you look at whoscored.com, which isn't the be all and end all, but he's Newcastle's best rated player this season, with an average match rating of 7.31. He looks a $1 million. He looks like Franz Beckenbauer, as I call him in my written match report for True Faith. And in his ability on the ball yesterday, you know, basically set, like, started that goal. What a ball it was up the line to Wilder Perez. But then, I don't know, Norman, what do we do? Do we play five at the back against Fulham at home, or do we go back to four? And if so, if Lejeune is presumably going to be back, if not next week, but, you know, for the Christmas period after, who on earth plays for Newcastle United at the back, in your opinion?
If Lejeune's fit and we go to four at the back, I would always say that Lejeune's a fixture. Shea is clearly, his footballing talent is you know, is spectacular. He can run with the ball, he can pick a pass, his positional sense when he's attacking is unreal. I mean, if you look at the game against West Ham, he probably fashioned our best chance when he came in at the back post and hit one along the floor that Fabianski saved, and he did something similar against Huddersfield yesterday. He's one of those centre halves that you think once he gets a goal, he'd probably go on to get 4 or 5 for the season. But I still think that Lejeune not only has the kind of the footballing ability of Shea, I also think he's a better defender. So for me, Lejeune is an absolute fixture. The other two centre halves, Lascelles and Fernandes, I mean, you know, you decide. I mean, whoever's in form at that particular moment in time, because they're both just equally as effective as each other at what they do. In terms of how we set up against Fulham, back five or back four, I mean, you say it didn't work against Wolves. Maybe not, but we were very much in the ascendancy at ones each before Yedlin was sent off, I thought we were going to go on and win the game. So if he'd won that game 2-1 with that back five, maybe we wouldn't have thought it didn't work. You know, we won, so i.e. we could see it work. But against Fulham, it's so tough, because it depends what kind of, you know, what Fulham's template under Ranieri is right now. Are they still playing the same way they played under Jokanović? You know, massively open at the back. To be honest with you, I saw them marking against West Ham yesterday, and it was absolutely fucking tragic. I can't answer it, because 7 points out of nine away from home, spectacular. But then in the home match, does that sound a bit too defensive? Or do we play three centre-halves and have the wing-backs pushing higher up the pitch? I think I'm a gut instinct winner. I think I'm a gut instinct, and I don't want to see Shea dropped. Therefore, we should go with five at the back. But Shea's been brilliant. And I'd just like to also mention, when you've got a player like Shea in the side, and then you've got Key in front of him, I don't know if you noticed, but Key's ball over the top for that chance that Shea had yesterday was absolutely spectacular. Just picked him out. Like, absolutely put it on his toe, and it was brilliant. I thought, even though Key went off after 72 minutes, I thought he was great. And you made a special mention of Clark and Manquillo. I think Hayden deserves a special mention as well for coming on yesterday and putting in a really, really good 20 minutes. I've gone completely off track here, mate, but it's because I'm extremely happy with the performance. But I don't think we should be looking to drop Shea for the match against Fulham at home, because he offers so much going forward.
Before we talk about Key, Si, your thoughts on that in the formation against Fulham and which centre-back start?
I think it's a really tough one, because after the what was the last home game? West Ham?
Wolves.
We were probably too negative, and we really would like to see a bit more of a positive approach to a home game against the worst defensive team in the league by an absolute mile. We'll be able to score more goals than them, so I'd probably err on the side of just playing two at the back and having, you know, six more forward-thinking players ahead. But out of the players who played yesterday and at Wolves, Lascelles is the one that I would drop. That tackle he made in the first half was hilariously stupid on De Portre. he's lucky not to get a red card, but he also had a stinker against Wolves. But he's also the club captain, so it's hard to just take him out of that team. But Kieran Clark and Cher are in such good form. Clark has also got a goal in him. In a home match against Fulham, I'd probably take Lascelles out of that back five and play with four.
Actually, can I just add, jump in there quickly? Alex, you seen that the back five didn't look too good against Wolves, and as I say, you know, I broadly agree with that. However, Shea was suspended for that game, so there's a possibility that the back five didn't work precisely because we didn't have that ball playing centre half in it.
I agree.
So I think for Fulham, I'd go for it. I'd go for the five at the back still.
I agree, and that's what my initial question was. What I said initially was like it's almost like the back five doesn't work without Shea because he has that ability, and if you could get Shea and Lejeune in a back five, it'd be much better. But I also worry, you know, Fulham. I mean, we're going to have a full Fulham preview with a Fulham fan for patrons through the week. So we'll talk more about it then. But I just think Fulham have got Mitrovic up front. He'll play one up front, and Fulham will look to players on the counter attack, and like Wolves did in that when we have loads of possession with a back five, and there's just nothing in front of the lads. There's no movement. There's no making any runs. There's not enough offensive players. It didn't work in my opinion, but I'm sure Rafa knows what to do. Key Sun Young, Adam, playing well. I want your thoughts on him in the Asia Cup. Do you think he'll go? What is it looking like? And if he does go, what's the damage going to be to Newcastle United?
If he does go, there's a chance that he could actually be summoned after the Fulham game, which is a bit of a concern given the Chelvey's thigh injury, which is he hasn't been able to recover from fully. He's made the bench. I mean, he's on the bench against Burnley. We saw him doing some warm ups at half time and full time. There's something not right there, and it would be a bit of a worry. As Norm mentioned, Hayden came in again out the cold yesterday and did a job. Like, he just gets brought on as a body to stand in front of that the back five, the back four, whatever it is, and just block, be an obstacle to teams trying to break us down. So the fact that he has had, you know, a few minutes of game time here and there slightly betters our situation if Key's summoned away. You know, the future of his international career has been sort of it's sort of been up in the air since the World Cup. Really, he captained the team in the World Cup, got injured for their last group game, but I think he's just still trying to deliberate what the best course of action is. I think the fact that he hasn't ruled himself out probably means that he is going at some point, but it's whether he can negotiate going a little bit later, because I think they can call him up about 2 weeks before the tournament starts, which obviously would rule him out of the, you know, the Boxing Day game against Liverpool. We could really do with him there. So who knows how it's going to work, how they negotiate with the South Korean Football Association. I'm not too sure, but at the minute, given Shelby's absence and not knowing when he's going to come back in, we could really, really do with him, because he's formed this, as we've all known, this very meaningful partnership with Diarmi in Shelvey's absence. However, I think if Shelvey was fit, I still think Shelvey Diarmi is our best centre midfield pairing, because I think Shelvey gives us more in terms of looking forward, creating chances, final third, as well as the defensive stuff as well. And The Shelvey's defensive work so far this season has kind of gone under the radar, I feel. People kind of forget just how important he has been and his leadership qualities as well. So I'm really, really enjoying Key's form at the minute and the partnership that he's struck up with Diarmi. But we could be in a situation where we're sort of left a bit threadbare in the centre of the park.
Who would have thought it, eh? Mike Ashley's Newcastle United struggling for players in key positions. Si? Context of this win, are we still very much in the relegation zone? Are you thinking that realistically it's going to be the three that are down there, or three of the four that are down there? Like, what does this result do for Newcastle United's season?
I mean, I alluded to it before. I think that the season's kind of panning out as you'd expect, given the fixture we had early doors. You'd like to think that when it comes to us having played 19 games, so the halfway point, we'll probably have another 3 points, one from the next two games. So we'll be on 19 points. Do that again over another 19 games. We'll finish comfortably, I think. We should probably have a few more points than we had, but that wouldn't really have us any higher up the table, because I think we're 5 points off Brighton, who are 13th, and they've got a game to play. So I don't think we're as bad as the bottom five. I don't think we'll go on another run like we did in the first 7 or 8 games. So we're not out of it, because as Norman said, absolutely, if we lose Rondon or any other key players, including Key, we're not really good enough to gather points without every one of our star players, you'd say. So we need a bit of luck in terms of injuries and keeping people fit and keeping key players in the side. Awesome additions in January would be nice. But Fulham, Southampton and Huddersfield just look so far off, even us. And then you've got Cardiff down there as well, who've managed to pull together some points. But there's enough teams down there that I don't see this as a particularly risky relegation season.
Lads, any thoughts on that?
Well, I'm not quite as confident as Si that we won't be in a battle from now until the end of the season. I think Southampton, even much in Southampton, yeah, are showing slight signs of being, you know, improved under someone who isn't Mark Hughes, basically. And if you look at the team on paper, they've got goals in them. They've got like Danny Ings and Charlie Austin. I mean, I know they're kind of your like throwback centre forwards, but they've both got goals in. Ings has just got 2 excellent goals today. They've got quality through the side, and if this Hassan Tuttle gets his act together, they could be all right. The side I think that are really in the shit are Burnley. I think Burnley are utterly atrocious. They're absolutely abysmal. And I think you mentioned, Alex, before we started recording, how lucky even they've been for their victories this season, Burnley. They're just terrible. Dyche looks like the kind of man who's run out of ideas. I might be completely wrong, but that's what they look like at the moment. I still think Cardiff's away form is going to absolutely bite them in the backside. So for me, Burnley, Cardiff, Huddersfield are probably the three sides at the moment I feel are going to be the bottom three. But for us, you know, we've
Fulham will stay up.
Oh God, aye, Fulham. When they're on here, can all four of them not get relegated? The stat that we discussed briefly prior to recording as well was this time last season. So it was actually this day last season was 18 games played, and we had 1 point less than we've got now. We're in the bottom three. So to a certain extent, despite the horror start we had, you could see we've actually improved on last season. Be nice to have the same second half again. We'll be right up the table, but I'm still very nervous because, you know, this is Newcastle United, this is Mike Ashley's Newcastle United, and who knows what's going to go on in January. I still think it is absolutely vital we get in a winger, a centre forward, and a centre midfielder in the window. Will it happen? Probably not, but do we need it? Yes.
We've got the perfect game this weekend, bottom of the league, concede goals for fun, Fulham. What's interesting to me is I look back when we played Aston Vale on the same weekend, 2015-16, we went down, you know, we'd just beaten Liverpool, we'd just beaten Spurs, and we went into that game against Vale, and they were like bottom of the league, out of sight. They didn't have a hope in hell of surviving. They were so cut off. That's 7 points from 17 games, and Fulham come to us with 9, so it shows you how the league is getting worse in terms of how much more points the top six are picking up. That 7 points back then was just not even a chance of staying up. Whereas if Fulham beat us next weekend, they'll probably move out the relegation zone, and they've only got 2 points more. If we beat Fulham and we've got 19 points from 17 games, despite a very tough run of fixes in January and February for us, I'd think we're going to stay up quite comfortably, because you probably, if you're looking at the bottom of the league now, having about 10, what's the relegation zone, 10 points. I mean, all these teams play each other, so they will pick up points, but I'd think 32 points is probably enough to stay up. And if we get the 90 points before Christmas and you get a draw at Watford, or you beat Watford and you maybe even get something against Man United at home, and we're going to the kind of, you know, the FA Cup third round day with over 20 points, needing kind of 10-12 points from your last 18 odd games to survive, we're more than capable of doing that. And I think we'll stay up comfortably. If we lose to Fulham, anything's possible. So that's how big a game it is next weekend. And of course, we'll bring you all of the coverage. We've got loads of podcasts planned through the week for you coming up on Patreon. So please do get involved if you like the show. Adam, can I suppose I'll get your thoughts on the relegation picture, because we've all given ours. Where do you think this leaves United?
I think in terms of our defensive solidity is just, I think it's just too good at the minute. I know that sounds cocky at the minute and arrogant, but I'm sort of in the a bit more in the Simon camp. I think, you know, you think that, I mean, we consider that Cardiff and Burnley have had probably awful defensive performances so far this season. Fulham have conceded 9 more than both of them. Like, Fulham have conceded 20 more goals than we have so far this season. Like, they're gone. Like, I don't know how you recover from that. I think that's incredibly difficult. Our defence is better than Bournemouth's, Watford's, West Ham's, Manchester United's, and we're sort of level with Everton and Brighton in terms of goals we've conceded. I think that foundation alone, because a good defence, conceding none, gets you at least a point. And we have the ability to nick a few wins, as we've shown, like, we can do that. But there's plenty of other teams below us and around us that struggle to do even that and don't have that defensive solidity that we have. I think I think that'll put us in good stead, and a couple of additions, it's all it'll take. We'll regardless of what's happening to takeover, a couple of people will come in somehow. I'm quite confident about that. That might be naive, but I do believe that. And I think, you know, he's Rafa Benitez's defensive coach. He's got the defence probably playing about as good as it can do for the talent that we have in it. We just need to bolster the attacking third and make Rafa's blanket just that little bit bigger.
Well said. That's it for the True Faith podcast this week. Thanks for listening. It's been an absolute pleasure to record, because United now beats winning away from home in the Premier League in the big games. And that's what Rafa Benitez and Newcastle do. We'll win the big, big games when it matters. And God, we could have done with him at the club over the years. So yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks to Adam, Sia, Norman. Give them a follow on social media. I'll post the links. And we'll be back for you, well, probably about this time next week, when hopefully we're in as good a mood after doing Fulham by several goals to nil, because we like keeping clean sheets too with this fantastic goalkeeper that we have in Martin Dubravka. So this has been the True Faith podcast. Thanks for listening. Speak to you soon. I give it to Rob.